Welcome back to the Ox Unplugged, where our Chekhov's gun is definitely Star Wars. I'm Crispy Kraut.
I'm Mr. J Wit. That's cheating.
Oh, come on. It's true, though. How many times do we bring it up in a podcast?
And I'm Halion, and my MacGuffin is booze.
It begins.
Yes. Oh, God. It's true, though. It, if we have a podcast, Star Wars canon will come up in a single episode.
Hey, I would just like to point out that you're the first one who said Star Wars in this one, not me.
Listen, I was playing to the troops, all right? And speaking of which, that is our topic again today, board troops that we love.
Well, last week was tropes we hate, now it's tropes we love.
Oh, shit. Why did I think this was part two?
Because apparently your MacGuffin was booze today, too.
No more questions. Well, we're going to have to cut all this.
I am
no, we're not.
No.
The worst part. I will start us off. I think giant insects are fun. I really do.
Absolutely.
I don't know what I like about them other than they're big old insects you can squash. Like, they're very fun monsters.
So, like, them?
I was just thinking of them, yeah.
Food from the gods? Where it, like, makes all the ants and shit grow really big?
The King Kong movie from 2005 with all the big bugs in that.
Eight-legged freaks?
Oh, good one.
I also like the trope when you take an animal and you give it insect abilities. You see that a lot in different monsters. Where they like have like skittering legs and you're like, oh, that's fucked up. Things don't move like that. What's going on?
Or like that shitty World War Z movie where they made all the zombies like ants.
I hated that movie. I didn't watch it either.
I watched the first few minutes and it was like, this is nothing like the book. And no.
Yeah, the book.
No, fast zombies.
Yeah, no. The book actually has like depth to it. It looks into like geopolitical, environmental, economic, all sorts of stuff that comes with a zombie apocalypse. And that had none of it. It was just like 2 hours of Brad Pitt running around while zombies just tumbled CGI over each other. Wow, we are getting off topic.
We talk about a thing we like. Have you heard of World War Z, the movie?
Well, you know, this makes me think of the thing that happened in Star Wars.
Oh my God.
So recently, as per Halion's request and my Mrs. J's sister, she gave a different request for like stuff to watch. And I think that it is a really good and useful point of comparison of what the tropes are that are used too much but are good. And those are Shogun and Blue Eye Samurai.
Yes.
We watched both first episodes, and then we went back to Blue Eyes Samurai.
Mm-hmm.
Because Shogun is the real big popular TV show right now. Everyone's loving it. Everyone's getting into it. But I had enough problems that we just didn't like it that much. And it was because it had two little tropes, basically, more or less, to help combine it. Yeah. So, as an example, literally as the example. I don't consider this a spoiler. It's like the first half of the first episode. The titular Blue Eye Samurai, they are going out to go beat up their dad. That's their thing.
Specifically to hunt him down and kill him.
Yep. Yeah, that's what they're going out to do, which is great. But it gives the story a framework from which you can then build out characters, you can expand out, but it always gets redirected back into that one thing of, we gotta keep moving, we've gotta find this person, we've gotta beat them up and have a action scene and then a resolution. It has that narrative beats that makes it a lot easier to watch in order to follow through on all the logic. As compared to Shogun, which has three or so different storylines, all interweaving and doing all this complex narrative things of like, oh, we've got these white people who are showing up, but then there's the Catholics that are there already, and they don't like them, but then there's the Shogun, and the Shogun has his minions, and his minions have their minions, and you have all of the complex all the arguing and all of the political intrigue that is then interweaving with each other, which then muddies the narrative. It makes it more difficult to follow any character, any single character.
Because tropes are something that, you know, they're there because it's a way to tie the story together. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, because tropes have been used so often, it's a lot easier to feed back that into each other. So that way you can just go like, okay, it's this. We're doing outsider thing. We're talking about monsters, purity and impurity. Like, it hits all of those notes a lot harder because it doesn't make you have to figure out what's going on. Oh, okay, we need to spend an extra 30 seconds talking about where we are in order to get further. You already have that set up.
Yeah, it's plot and story devices that everyone is already familiar with enough that they can follow along. They instantly understand what a character's motivation is or what their goal is, or, as you said, the arc of what the story is going to go. It gives you a method of following along and being familiar.
And, like, both shows are hilariously violent and, like, action-filled and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get a lot of the same thing, but also because it's animated, you can have a lot of different sort of quick action scenes versus real life, where no one really appreciates it if you, like, add motion blur to a sword swing.
Mm-hmm.
But in anime, yeah, that's great. Absolutely, do it more.
Yeah. You can also get away with a lot more rule of cool physics.
Yeah, which 100%. Happens a lot in that show. And it's very fun.
Yeah.
And rule of cool, by the way, is a trope. Like, that
yes,
is
it is.
Oh,
yeah, and it's, yeah, and it's like one of the foundations for, like, most genres of just make it a little bit more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. The rule of cool is something that's definitely what you want to have in a lot of shows and things. Because, you know, at a certain point, you know, realism is good in shows, but at a certain point, it just gets to the point where it gets in the way of the story. You know, I mean, that's why you see a lot of stuff in sci-fi where they have FTL or like artificial gravity is a big one, because, you know, you can have something that doesn't have or artificial gravity, but it's going to be like difficult to do.
It costs a lot more money to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And plus, like you said, in space stuff, we've got artificial gravity. You've got just the time compression of, you know, FTL getting from one end of the galaxy to the other and whatnot. So you're not spending, you know, copious amounts of time just watching our heroes sitting around their ship, taking naps, you know, doing menial tasks, reading a book, because you compress all that down so it's faster and quicker because you want to keep the narrative rolling.
And if it takes 3 years to go from one place to another, then you have to age up the actors every single time, which fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of my personal favorite tropes, which I was trying to think about it when we were doing this episode, what came to mind. But the first one that really came for me is I love the fucking hero ship, right? There's, like, it's particularly in sci-fi, but it's not always just in sci-fi. It's like there's the one ship or the one car or the one vehicle, whatever. It is the hero ship. No matter what, you know, even if it gets beat up, you know, crashed, shot up, whatever, eventually it will survive. It will somehow allow our protagonist to save the day. And it's usually got, like, a bigger, more powerful gun, or it's faster, or it's tougher than, you know, whatever the opponent. Like, I just fucking love the hero ship, you know, the Enterprise from Star Trek, the Yamato from Star Blazers, the fucking Millennium Falcon. I mean, I love that special hero ship thing that just, like, yeah, okay, I realize every time you see it, all right, we know nothing super bad's going to happen because they're on the hero ship. I just can't help it. It's still, I still get excited about it.
Yeah, the hero ship's a fun one. One of my favorite tropes. I guess it's kind of a trope, is power armor. Like, the idea of power armor in a lot of sci-fi.
What? Know, that doesn't sound like you.
Weird, right? But yeah, it's, because it's kind of like a mech suit. I mean, or it's like a mech that you can wear, which, you know, if you're not, giant robots are cool, but sometimes it's just, like, kind of impractical or weird in a setting. And something like that is a way to have it where it kind of makes more sense, if that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, just like taking someone and turning them into like a Superman just by stepping into a mechanical suit. And, you know, when it comes to power armor, I like the stuff that looks way more mechanical and things versus like a pair of tights with armor glued to it, like a lot of depictions seem to be.
When you have an exosuit too. I do, a good exosuit is nice.
Like,
just like you just have like pistons that just jam your arm faster and harder.
Yeah, like Elysium.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. The one that was bolted directly into his skeleton.
Yep. That was a really good one.
Or you know, to a slightly lesser degree, would you consider the power loader from Aliens?
Oh, the power loader definitely fits in the realm of power armor, or like a mech suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really cool trope I like a lot. You know, of course, I like giant robots as well, because who doesn't?
So there is another. I do have another one that's stupid, but anytime it shows up, it makes me laugh, and that's all I need. Meato vision, when like someone is so hungry, they look over at someone else's head, and they just turn into a ham, and you're like,
I love that.
Yes, like the first time you really see that is in like the old Looney Tunes cartoons.
Yeah.
Whenever someone's really hungry, and they look at someone, and they turn into a ham, or they turn into like a hamburger or something. Yeah.
I love that too.
Yeah, that's funny.
We don't see it that often anymore, but anytime it shows up, it's nice.
I think it's a trope that needs to come back for sure.
So the issue is that we don't make a lot of comedies right now, and it is explicitly comedy.
Yeah. And it's not like a rom-com or that kind takes a very specific, almost a slapsticky or very specific type comedy where that would work.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
And in theory, animated, but you could probably do it live action too.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you could, like a Wayne Brothers kind of movie almost.
Another one that I like that unfortunately it is used a lot, and you can generally see it when it's going to happen. And it's not always done great, but I am down for the hero's journey, particularly the suffering hero. You know, the hero that's like Rocky. He's got to get beat up and knocked down to within an inch of his life before he can stand up and like somehow come back and win the day. You know, that like John fucking Wick. He should be like, he has to be shot and beaten and almost, you know, for what should kill a man, but then somehow comes back and still wins the day. I like the hero that has to suffer and be injured, grievously injured, before he can somehow come back. Almost, and no, I do not consider Dragon Ball Z quite the same thing.
Oh, man.
I don't consider that quite the same, because, you know, where the Saiyans, if you don't kill them, but you injure them badly, somehow they get stronger when they get better. I don't know.
I genuinely have never watched Dragon Ball. You could tell me that they are space wizards and I would believe you.
No, they're space monkeys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that true or just a thing?
It's not. It's true. They turn into giant monkeys when there's a full moon. They are were monkeys.
They also have, they're Saiyans are born looking like normal humans, except they have like long tails.
Oh.
Yes.
But if you take their tail off, then they lose their ability to transform.
Okay.
The whole thing.
Yep.
I believe you.
The look on your face.
Okay. Their powers are stored in their tail, I guess. Sure. Okay.
No, just the ability to transform. Their power comes from their genetics.
Okay. Like normal things. Okay.
Something. I don't know, man.
It's anime.
Next level anime.
Oh, yeah. Trying to think some other good tropes. I mean, one that I kind of like that can be overdone is, like, you know, like, here comes the cavalry, like cavalry to the rescue deal, you know, like that was one of my favorite parts of Attack of the Clones, was when they're trapped in the stadium, and then next thing you know, it's just like all the Jedi show up, and then the clones, they get trapped. Yeah. Yeah, then the clones show up.
Yeah, yeah. When the like an Endgame, when all the heroes show up out of at the last minute, you know, coming out of the portals, like in Star Wars, A New Hope, when Luke's about to get blasted by Vader and Han comes out of the out of the blind spot in the sun and shoots Vader.
What do you mean they blew up the Death Star?
So, okay. There is another type of sci-fi trope that's fucking great.
Yeah.
Scavenger worlds.
Mm.
When it's like, they're just a trash world, but then they have a whole bunch of high quality stuff that they're just using wrong.
Yeah, it's like a cargo cult almost.
Not even necessarily that. It's just, they don't know how to make it, but they can use it. And so they're just using it in, like, I guess an example is in World War II, the Japanese, when they were building their planes, they used horse and buggy to just move plane parts around because they didn't have enough cars. And I like that mixture of using absolute high-end technology and then just being like, look, I don't fucking, just get it over there somehow.
Oh, yeah, I like that as well. Just the kind of, like, It like schizo tech, I think, is a good way to put it, where it's like you've got, you know, like Dune, for instance, you have guys that have shields and you have ray guns and things, but they're still doing sword fights.
Dune tries to lie to themselves about why they're doing it, though. It's just but not because sword fights are fucking fun. Even when they're like, oh, they don't have shields, it's totally, you could just be like, all right, just fucking shoot them then. Don't bother with this. Instead, they're like, no, we must sword fight because it's the one true way.
They don't really explain it in the movie as to why, but, you know, in the book, it's because laser and shield not go good together.
Yeah.
Because it would be dishonorable to kill them without, you know, the blade.
Without letting them try. No, because even in the book, they had the trope where it's, when they're like two characters fighting off each other and they know the other, that like, oh, these people don't have shields because blah, blah, blah. Just fucking shoot them then. Don't fuck around with this. Put
honorable.
Yeah, it's like Indiana Jones in Raiders when the guy comes at him with the scimitar and he just pulls out his revolver and just shoots him.
I love that scene so much.
You know the origin of that scene, don't you?
Yeah, dysentery.
Yeah, it wasn't in the script. But Harrison Ford had caught this horrendous case of dysentery, and it was hot. It was down towards the end of the day, and he had to shoot this scene where he was going to be like in this like physical fist fight with the guy, and like have to somehow overcome it. And he and Harrison Ford didn't want to film it, so he was just like, "I've got a gun, right? Why wouldn't I just shoot him?" And so they filmed that one, and they thought it looked so cool that that's the one they went with. So they got him off set quicker.
It's amazing how many fun, good things come about with laziness.
How many good things come out from dysentery?
Yeah.
Oregon Trail.
You too can shit yourself to success.
I also like the when you have the honorable warrior culture. You know, where it's that culture that they're all about battle or fighting or warfare or whatever, but they have a code and they have rules, and you know, they may be like seem like savages, but they do have a very rigid structure, and you can, you know, like the Klingons in Star Trek, you know, they first come out as like these awful, but they have developed them over the years where you see there's this very layered structure, and you earn, you know, where you can see where the value of their that they place in society and stuff. The clans in Battletech are kind of that way, but they don't lean into it as much.
I don't mind it in fantasy. In sci-fi, it never quite meshed with me for whatever reason. Because, I don't know, it feels like if you're going to be a spacefaring group, you should probably be a little bit...
militarized.
Not necessarily higher in the like culture tree, but like violence isn't inherently the superior leadership, right?
No.
It is the most effective one, but it's not necessarily the optimal. And I'm like, I just feel like it doesn't always feel natural to me for someone to go from that to, also we have like a billion people on our planet, well, like 100 billion people, and we're like doing all these things, but also if that guy fucks your wife, you can go kill him.
Well, and you can challenge him to, you know, to an honorable duel. I mean, there's honor in that. It's not that violence is their answer for everything per se, speaking specifically of the Klingons, but it's just about us where you have this society where they aren't just that, right? Where they aren't just about violence. They're not like the Vikings, which were presented as these barbarians that were just going out, you know, pillaging and raping and destroying and, you know, burning everything. They were just being, you know, awful forces of nature. But it's where you see that they're capable of these great violence and great things, and that they do seem primed, and that they value combat, they value warfare and battle. But there is an honor system behind it. There are reasons behind it, and they have these rules and codes that they do follow in regards to that. I can kind of get behind that, especially when it's well done.
I suppose that's the thing, is if it's well done, it's nice, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's true with everything, though.
No.
No, we should be putting meat on top of people's heads, even on the good ones.
Yes,
even
non-comedies. I think, Jay, you would love a version of Saving Private Ryan where every time we see Matt Damon, or every time Tom Hanks looks at Matt Damon, his head just like turns into a pork chop. I could totally see you loving that.
Oh, see, my mind went a different route. My mind is like they replace him with the puppet from Team America World Police in that movie.
Just overlay someone a different thing every time they talk. They're just sitting there, like, reading a book, doing their thing. They're like,
yes,
hey,
yes.
Where do we go? And just, like, it appears into, like, a Target.
Yeah, every time Matt Damon's character shows up. No. Here's the thing. It depends. Yeah, every scene his character shows up, it changes. Like, one scene, he is Matt Damon. The next scene, it's like a Matt Damon stunt double playing him. One scene, it's the animatronic. One scene, he's completely, like, animated. Like, he's animated. The rest of everything's real.
Yes.
You know, we go through a scene where he's a sock puppet. Like, an actual, like, sock puppet.
Yes.
Okay. This could be done. We could totally do this.
Breaking new terrible grounds.
I just thought of a title for it. It's called Multi Dimensions.
Saving Private Ryan across the dimension. The dimensions of madness.
See, the issue is that we're gonna default to Muppets again. It all comes back to Muppets.
Well, I mean, it's the Muppets. The Muppets are answer for all of that. Yeah. Ooh, a claymation.
I'm going to need that as a clip. It all comes back to Muppets.
The Muppets, yes. If I edit this one, it totally will be. But like a little claymation Matt Damon, like you see them marching down the street and everybody else is normal. And it's just a little claymation Matt Damon walking between them. That would be great.
That would be great, yeah. Matt Damon is my favorite trope.
I would say more Samuel L. Jackson.
Motherfuck.
Because, like, he's the same character pretty much in everything he plays. He's just playing Samuel L. Jackson in this or Samuel L. Jackson in this. It doesn't matter for the most part.
True. He does play himself a lot in the movies, which, you know, guy like him, he's very recognizable. I can understand it. Although I guess that kind of does get you, like, typecast. So,
well.
His name is typecast as Matt Damon. The whole.
Yeah.
I was back to Matt Damon.
Why can't Matt Damon play a different Matt Damon than Matt Damon? I don't get it.
Yeah. Why can't it be Mac Damon for a change? It's just Matt Damon, but he has a New York cabbie accent.
What's that movie where it's, I want to say it's Jet Li's in it? Yeah, no. Why was that your default?
There's Jack and Jill is always on the tip of his tongue. You know this.
First of all, I have to say this much. My fiance absolutely despises Adam Sandler.
As she should.
Yeah, her and her coworker get into arguments over who's worse, him or Nick Cage. And I'm just like, you can't.
Oh, no, no, you can't compare because Nick Cage is so brilliant at overacting and chewing the scenery. Aww. That even when his acting is too far and over the top and bad, it still goes around and becomes something exquisite.
Those Not are great really. Movies. We call those It's Tax Season, and Nick Cage has some money he owes.
See, Nick Cage knows who he is.
That's right. Different. That's what I love about him.
Yeah. Adam Sandler has given up who he is, I think.
Hey, I thought the Spaceman movie wasn't terrible.
I didn't watch that one. I saw it had Adam Sandler on the front, and I didn't click on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not terrible. It's kind of like...
Is that the high end?
No, I mean, it's okay. It's very mostly okay. It's got some interesting ideas.
It sounds like Stockholm Syndrome to me.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a glowing recommendation.
No, it's fine. Like it's almost like, how do I describe it? It's like if you took Interstellar, Moon, and squashed them together, and let Adam Sandler cut out the bits that he and put it together the way he thought it would make sense.
Oh, so he cuts out the good bits. Hello, welcome to the Adam Sandler Hate Hour on this podcast.
I am hating on Adam. No,
I will not be a part of that. He has made some truly awful movies, but there's been a lot of movies that I found incredibly entertaining.
Are you secretly a basic bitch? Yeah, you are.
Yes. Okay. No, there's no secret to this. No, I have long said that I have a terrible taste in music. I have terrible taste in books for the most part.
Holy fuck.
Absolutely, I'm basic.
I hope to God that was caught on there. That was the best fucking quote of this episode.
I make no bones about it.
The truth comes
out. At least you're honest about your bad taste.
Yeah. Hey, man, I just got to be me. Embrace it. Okay.
Weren't we talking about tropes?
The tropes we love. Another one that I really love. Is when you have a character, and usually it's going to be the protagonist or one of the protagonists. It's like, you know, usually going to be the broody, quiet guy that, you know, the one that never really does anything or says anything, doesn't really talk, doesn't really get involved. Or it's going to be like that, like, meek character that, like, you know, is scared or doesn't want to fight or what have you, or the character who's like really devoted to peace and is a pacifist and doesn't believe in violence or something. But they've all got that one thing. It might be a book, it might be a certain, you know, item, an article, a piece of clothing. You know, in the case of John Wick, it's his fucking dog. But that one thing. And when someone fucks with it, it's like the switch flips, and now it is on. Like, they are about to throw down, and they're going to kick some ass and chew some bubble gum, and they're out of gum. I don't know why, but I love that, like, that just where there's just, like, imagine the, you know, the thing happens, and, you know, and you've got shit fuck skull splitter standing there, and he's got his little teacup that he always has his tea in, and then, you know, the asshole comes in and bumps into the table and the teacup falls down, and there's like that anime thing where it just zooms in on his eyes and everything gets really dark except this really thin line at his eyes, and you could see, like, he's suddenly like, it is now on and shit's about to go down because you fucking beat his cup. I don't know, I'm a sucker for that.
I want to see something like that, but it's over something dumb like he's about to eat like an ice cream cone and some guy bumps into him and knocks it over, and it's like some like crime boss that does it, and he's just like he starts glaring and the Kill Bill music starts playing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, the guy's walking along and he's in a fight, and like he's like, you know, deflecting the blows, like not hitting back. He's just deflecting them like ho-hum, ho-hum. And then the guy pulls out a knife and he's deflecting blows, but then the knife slices the band on his friendship bracelet. that his niece made for him, and suddenly, and you watch the slow-mo, like Batman and Crime Alley, when the pearls hit the ground, the little beads are hitting the ground, and like one of them's a little smiley face, and it lands in a puddle, and suddenly the guy, and the guy with the knife looks at him, is like, oh, shit, man, I'm sorry, and so he just like punches a, through, you know, a hole through his face.
That's like, yeah. Fun, pal.
Yeah, there you go.
So, what you're telling me is that you really like Ip Man.
I've never watched him.
Oh my god, you need to watch Ip Man.
Yeah.
It is a kung fu movie. Like, it is. Don't watch any of the other ones. The other ones are shit.
Yeah. I've by this trope, I should, like, really love, like, One Punch Man. But I've watched, like, a couple of little things. I mean, I'm just saying, in my head, I make them the same thing.
No, Ip Man is very different. The first, just is only it? The first. Well, one, everything else is garbage, but the first one is great.
Every time I've seen that in my head, it's not Ip Man, it's IP Man.
I'm sorry, that's his name.
Again, I've never seen it, so in my head canon, it's still IP Man.
IP freely.
Keep drinking those beers, you will.
Shut up. No one has to know.
Soon Crispy's gonna be the beer in, pee out in a continuous motion.
I've had those days. You act like that's a new thing.
Oh yeah. Like, I for one am a very efficient transporter of bourbon from my liquor cabinet to my bathroom. Like, it takes a few minutes, but it gets there.
It is 100% though.
Mm-hmm. I'm also a very efficient converter of oxygen into carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm. Plants love you. You give so much CO2 out.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, everybody left. For a second there, I thought y'all were trolling me.
Nope, getting a drink. So, oh god, Crispy did too.
I know, we lost Crispy. I stepped away for a second, figuring you two would keep talking, and I come back and it's like, oh no.
There's a thing that I wanted to mention. That I think you would enjoy. So I was like, wait for you. We can start now if you want. So, okay. Another one that I do like is, I really like when we have what are like fancy men accessories, like a very nice pipe or like the smoking jacket sort of thing.
Or a cool cane.
Yeah. Those are always fun little tropes of like just quickly establishing a character.
Like in The Kingsman, how whatever the main guy played by Colin Firth is, how he's got like the umbrella, and he seems very proper with it, but he can also kick your ass with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
You know what trope I really like? The BFG, aka the big fucking gun. When there's at least one character that just has like a huge gun in an action movie. Like, you have fucking Jesse Ventura in Predator with Old Painless is just carrying around a minigun, or, you know, some guy with a rocket launcher like Commando or something. Just the one dude that's just like a walking tank just to fuck shit up. Which kind of ties in with the power arm now that I think about it.
Heavy arms, Gundam.
Oh, yes, yes.
With all the miniguns and the missiles and stuff. I agree. I kind of like that too. The one guy who can just whip out the like the real heavy firepower.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It is not my sort of thing.
Oh, that's fair. I didn't think it was.
Yeah, no. I like my violence to be a little bit more straightforward. Like, if there's a good kung fu scene, I am there for it. Fucking love when it's just like dudes punching each other. Fuck yes. That is great. But when you get into guns, you get a lot less personal about it. And that's a lot less interesting to me.
Yeah, you do.
I understand that.
Unless you get into like Gunkata or something,
which is the same idea to me, basically.
It's kung fu with guns, basically. Yeah.
It's fucking sweet.
Hell yeah, you got like Equilibrium, where he's just YMCAing with fucking 45s. But you know, I do like a good fight scene. You know, fist fight. Having said that, though, my favorite that I need to actually see is the fight scene from They Live, where they're in the alleyway just beating the shit out of each other, and it's just like the most tired fight.
That's also a fun one, with them just bored, like tiredly beating each other because they've got nothing left.
Yeah, They're just both so worn out from trying to beat the living crap out of each other that they're just like, you want to keep doing this? It's like, no, man, I'm tired. All right, we'll call it a draw. Like, and then they go, like, you know, get a beer and are best friends.
Exactly. Just this big, brutal fight. I love that, too, when they have, like, a big, brutal fight, and then they're just, like, friends afterwards. Just like they're just sitting there at the bar just covered in blood.
We bonded over our mutual kicking of each other's ass.
I respect your ass-kicking ability. I respect yours, too. Boy, all right, let's go get drinks.
Yeah, are you concussed? Me, too. Did we just become best friends? Then you can make it, like, you know, a little uncomfortable. It's like, you know, you want me to rub some balm on your busted knuckles? Yeah, you rub my knuckles, I'll rub yours, you know.
Well, now I'm just thinking about Step Brothers when he clubs him with a shovel and starts burying him in the front yard. He's like, I'm alive. Shh, let the dirt shower over you.
Now, see, now that reminds me of Monty Python. Bring out your dead. I'm not dead yet.
He's almost dead. I'm feeling better.
No, you're not. You're lying.
I'm going to pull through. Just hits him with a shovel. That's another good trope. Hitting people with shovels.
That's a great.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Instead of them getting murdered, though.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's not. It's not even them getting murdered with it. It's like they just get their ass knocked unconscious by a fucking shovel.
They get shoveled. The adjective.
I want that as a shirt. Yeah, you just like, and you know what? It has like that good ring to it. Like, you know, the frying pan in Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah.
Boom. Oh, that's a game we need to play again.
Like Mystery Men, where you had William H. Macy's character, the shoveler. Like he shoveled really well, and he could use his shovel to kick your ass. Like he could like use his shovel like nunchucks, basically.
I've not heard. Okay, sure, I believe you.
Have you not seen Mystery Men?
No.
I have not.
Oh, okay. Okay. I realize that you two are children and we're not of age.
Tell me a story, Dan.
When this came along. Well, back in the days, children. But no, Mystery Men is...
Tell me about Blockbusters again, mister.
let me tell you of a time when grunge was on the radio and comic books were slowly kind of sort of becoming mainstream, but not big comics like indie comics. And so they took this one-off team called the Mystery Men that were just like secondary characters in a underground indie comic called the Flaming Carrot. And they made a pseudo superhero team about them that was tangentially very loosely based on them, but it was very fun and it had a hell of a cast.
Nice.
Anyway,
well, I guess that's one we got to check out then.
Yes, like I'm not saying it's a good movie, but it's fun.
Hellion, one of my favorite movies is Velocipaster, so
okay, fair enough.
For the viewers that are not aware, you need to see this movie. It's about a priest that gets cursed that could turn into a dinosaur and fights ninjas.
Turns into a dinosaur.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great movie.
Mystery Men is basically these misfit pseudo like R-list quote unquote heroes that form their own team because the main superhero has been accidentally killed. And I will just let you know, like Paul Rubens, you know, Pee-wee Herman, he plays a character called the Spleen, whose superpower is weaponized flatulence. That's the kind of movie that is.
I'm sorry.
You don't like anything.
Is it too undignified for your taste?
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm a dainty northern man. I don't like my stuff too much like that.
It's not he's not the main character. He's just a character. But fine. If I haven't sold you on Mystery Men, fine. I am also love the trope of the like the super like man with no name type, who's the quiet stranger, the one who doesn't really talk or say anything. You know, he's usually got like a hat and you can only barely see him. You know, he doesn't really say much or move very fast. He just kind of goes where and shows up where he's needed. You know, he's usually going to usually be, you know, if especially if it's like a Western, he's always going to be smoking, but you never see him drink. Just I like that. Just like that one character, like as soon as he shows up, you know, this is
serious
it.
And it's starting.
Yeah, this is a this is the bad man, right? It just I love that. They usually have their own theme music, you know. They're always typically they're shown from a camera angle of either close up on their face or from like down where they make them look even taller.
I want to see a bit of a twist on that trope specifically, where it's like, you know, they're a quiet, gruff guy that doesn't say anything, and then the minute they speak, it's just like, it's eating you, Gilbert Grape. Just like,
oh yeah, yeah. As soon as they start talking, they sound like Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, exactly. Just some, just the most goofy boys.
So. I do have a trope that's going to might even shock Haleon in that the fact that I like it.
Hmm.
I really like MacGyvering stuff.
When that's someone... not a shock to me. You're a damn engineer.
No. Because most of the time it doesn't fucking work like that. Right?
Of course it doesn't work like that, but it's the concept of it. I get that.
Like a glider out of shit in the shed.
I could totally get you loving when somebody kit bashes some Goldberg thing together that somehow saves the day, even though technically should never work in real life.
It's so fucking good every single time too. When you just go, oh no, if you do this, and that, you get this perfect thing. You're like, what the fuck? How? Every time I love them. It only sometimes works, but when it does, I do love it.
Yeah, it's like any trope. It's, you know, it's got its points.
I like the it's kind of ties a little bit into what you were talking about, Crispy, with the BFG. But I like it when you've got like that one character who's like the expert shot, like they never miss.
Yeah.
Like I love that, you know. But even better if they're like a quick draw, right? Like you barely see their arm move, and then like four guys just drop dead, boom, boom, and then they're just basically standing there like they never moved. I am a basic bitch. I love that shit.
I do like that kind of shit, or just like guy that's just like is like an amazing sniper. He just like he can shoot the drink out of someone's hand or something, like ridiculous.
Maybe I'm too less basic, but I don't like it. I don't know how to describe it, but I don't find guns as sexy as other people do. I think that's the bigger thing.
I get it.
I'd say that's part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is something more personal about when there is actual like fisticuffs or, you know, direct one-on-one physical combat.
Yeah.
There is something much more human and more direct about that. Yeah.
They're using the body that they're given and they're just seeing what they can do. And I like that.
Ooh, since you talked about the body that you're given, I love it when you've got that character who has like the one cybernetic limb, usually an arm, and it gives them like, and they can use it to like do all sorts of cool ass shit. You know, like they can turn their hand into a gun or a blade, or, you know, a shield pops out of it, or you could use it as like a grappling hook. Like I find that super cool.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't know exactly, like it needs, the issue I have is occasionally it becomes like the Doctor Who sonic screwdriver. Or just does everything, but if it can like cycle between like three different things, hell yeah. Also, grappling hooks are fucking cool.
Oh, grappling hooks are the best.
Nobody talks about it enough. Grappling hooks fucking rock.
There's a reason why. What's the most famous character who always has a grappling hook that comes to mind?
Good old Batman.
Batman, right. Like that's a central part of Batman. He's got the little thing, and then Bat he Damon. Swings off. What now?
I said Bat Damon.
All right, so now we got to remake Batman with Matt Damon.
Oh my god, I would watch that.
You just take okay, we have live action Batman. It's a horror movie, okay? We've got Batman, he's running around like you're from the perspective of a goon as he's like taking people off, and oh my god, you heard it. Joker has captured Batman. And they're trying to like figure out what's going on, and eventually they take it off and Matt Damon
And then Robin swings in to save him from Joker, and Robin is played by Ben Affleck.
Just absolutely terrible.
Yeah. And it's like they don't even bother trying to like de-age him or change it. Like he stands like a good half head taller than Batman. It's fine.
they have Batman only does physical things with the mask on, and he's just this off lean like guy who's like doing kickflips, takes the mask off, and just Matt Damon, like half a foot shorter.
Just like obvious stunt doubles.
Yes. Yeah. So it's like he's Batman, he's like 6'4", but as Bruce Wayne, he's like 5'10". Oh, that would be great.
Oh, wow. I'm here for it.
Oh, another trope I love is like when your character or your team or whatever, they've got like that like ancient servant or butler or just like, you know, like, you know, they, when you have that one character that's just like always kind of in the background, always has what you need, always kind of just kind of, you know, just kind of taking care of shit behind the scenes and stuff. I like that.
Oh, yeah. I do too.
It makes the world feel like it's functional.
And you know, you know what I love on top of that? It's like where somebody tries to do something to him and it turns out he's just like, oh, I'm a ex-special forces or something like that. Just
It's like how
break every bone in your body.
Yeah, like how they have retconned in some versions of Batman, they've retconned Alfred into being an Special Forces operative, SAS operative, whatever, SOS or whatever those weird names that the Brits use for their special forces in like MI6 or something.
Rumbly tumbly boys.
And like, he's a badass.
I don't know how I feel about that. Because I like the fact that you don't know what the fuck his deal is, and he just does things. By giving him a backstory, you sort of lose that mystery behind it.
That's fair.
There's a good comic book scene where a bunch of people, a bunch of villains break into Wayne Manor to try to get into the Batcave because they know Batman is Batman or Bruce Wayne. And they come in and there's like four or five of them like in a hallway, and Alfred's just standing there, you know, very curtly and basically saying, you know, well, if you're here, you must know that Master Bruce, you know, who Master Bruce is and this and that. And although you may... you know, understand that he has his one rule that he will not kill. I, however, have no such rule. And in the next scene, he pulls up a shotgun.
Okay, that's really good.
Yeah. I was like, oh, Alfred about to throw down.
Just a tape recorder of that.
Yeah, he's just got like a Martini Henry or something.
No, it's got like a blunderbuss.
Yeah.
Just has a blunderbuss. He just rolls some dynamite down the hallway.
Yeah, there we go. He's just got a hidden stash of dynamite. He's just pulling out of nowhere.
So I am curious what you guys' thoughts are on superhero teams.
It depends, I suppose.
No, that's right. I was just curious because I don't have a strong opinion, but I don't know if I should have one or not, but just... I don't know. And that's the thing.
I like it when my heroes are imperfect. I like it when my teams don't always win, won't always function perfectly, when there's dysfunction amongst the team. But yeah, I don't want my heroes, especially superhero teams, to be like, you know, like they shouldn't function like they're an Olympic bobsled team that's been practicing for 10 years together. And, you know, you know, I don't want that. I want a team that's like dysfunctional and argues and, you know, doesn't get along, sometimes screw shit up. Like if you're going to have a superhero team, I'm more interested in that than the ones that are always, that always win and are perfect. But that's me.
No, that's now, fair.
I definitely prefer it that way.
It's just an interesting question because superhero teams are kind of just unique to superheroes, because no other media has, like, main character messing around with other main character. And then, like, seeing how they interact like that. TV shows used to do that, but nobody watches dramas anymore, so.
Seven Samurai? Are they not kind of a superhero team? The Magnificent Seven, which, of course, the Western version of that. I mean, they're essentially, it's a superhero team. It's just, they don't have superpowers. They're just all brought together with certain skills to perform a certain thing. I mean, in a way, you could say Ocean's 11 is kind of like a similar thing where you got a bunch of these people with special skills brought together to perform something.
That's true.
Granted, it's, you know, it's that in and of itself is a type of genre. You have a bunch of disparate people brought together to perform or do something.
Yeah. But at the but my point is the difference though that I find is you're not doing a movie on like one dude from Ocean's 11. You are doing one movie on like Iron Man, and then he shows up in like a different, and then he shows up in the Avengers as like just movies.
Yeah, I guess you could say that's kind of like where when you're doing, like you're not doing, like you're not going to do a Ghostbusters, like four different Ghostbuster movies with each individual Ghostbuster and then do like the one where they all come together. So you are correct in that, is that when you're doing a superhero movie, you inevitably will have the individual superheroes and the, Bobo's trying to eat my mic. And then inevitably we'll have the movie where they kind of team up or come together. Now that's something that I love it when you have a good supervillain team up, but you never see that. The heroes always get to team up and work together, but you never see the villains really team up and work together.
We have a few movies and they're shit. That's a problem. They haven't figured out how to make a bad character the main character yet.
Well, that
I don't think narrative has figured that out yet.
Because if you make, it's like they can't make them both interesting. Because your main villain has to have something about them, like the Joker from The Dark Knight. You know, he was compelling, he was interesting, he was different. Well, it's hard to do that with two characters when you're having to split time.
Yeah, and I think also the bigger thing is if you're watching a movie of Batman fighting Joker, you spend more time with Batman. So you get the Batman tropes a lot quicker. You get like who he is, what his background is. But you don't get that with Joker. Maybe like a little bit, but not. It's 20 minutes of screen time as opposed to 60.
Not to the extent that you do with the hero. I get what you mean.
Yeah. So then when you do a super villain team up, you need to reestablish it because they've not had that much screen time to actually go in depth. And I think that's the issue. In theory, if we had a supervillain, more supervillain movies or supervillain focused comics, then we could have that more, have those more frequently. But without that, I don't see it happening.
Well, I think the Bobo, come on, man. you're getting a great picture of his cat ass. The problem that you have with that is anytime you do find a really interesting or provocative villain, you end up turning them into an anti-hero. Like it's just like they can't help it. They have to make them good. Like you can't just let them be bad for the sake of being or whatever, you know, you can't let them remain a villain. You end up having to make them at either a hero or some form of anti-hero. And I find that I kind of like a good anti-hero, but I don't like it when you take a dyed-in-the-wool, was made as one and should still be one villain, and then just for some reason turn them into an anti-hero just because they're popular and you want to sit and you want to, you know,
butts in seats.
Yeah, you're trying to, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? You're basically trying to make money off of it because it's a popular character. It's like, well, if you make it an anti-hero, then it appeals to more people. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not an easy answer. It's not if this was a solved problem, it would have been solved already.
Yeah. Oh, one last trope that I love before, because I know we're getting towards the end. I fucking love when characters break the fourth wall.
I don't know about that. That's one of those things where it's like, it can get real cliche real quick. It's like that old record scratch, like, yup, that's me. It's like, that is...
Well, again,
like that.
You can't put that in everything, right?
No.
Like you're not going to see like Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven right before a gunfight turn to the camera and be like, well, here I go killing again. You know,
I would love that.
You're not going to see it there, but there are certain genres and styles and types of movies or types of narrative where you're getting inner dialogue and stuff. I like that.
So there are two problems that I've seen, which is you don't want to break the flow. You want to like keep the momentum going, because you only want to get like an interpersonal scene when a conversation is happening, because otherwise it's just like shitty voiceover and nobody fucking likes voiceover.
Definitely not.
But you have to have voiceover sometimes, so you live with it. But that has been solved already. It's just a matter of transitioning it into video. And that is the theater, the side conversation thing, where everyone in the scene freezes and a spotlight shows up on that character, and then they just talk through how they're feeling. And House of Cards does that.
Yes.
It's fucking great, and I love it so much.
Where it's almost like everything, the scene pauses, yeah. And especially when it's Frank, the scene pauses, and like the lights will go down a little bit, and he's still moving and looking and talking to the camera to explain what's going through his mind, while everybody else is frozen. So it's almost like, it's very, very much like a stage play.
Yeah.
Where you're, yeah, and you're right. When they can do that and it's handled properly, it's really good.
Yeah, and I've not seen it used enough where it's gotten bad yet. But you do actually get occasionally that in anime, where like you just cut into like a character's like mental like jumping away thing. And those actually are pretty good too. I actually really like that. When you get into like what the character is thinking and how they're dealing with all the nonsense going on. Yeah. If this we could get that more into like movies and TV shows, I would fucking love it.
You know where I like that, how that shows up? And the first place I remember seeing it was House of Cards, is when you're seeing people text. And so they're showing the text bubbles on the screen. So the characters aren't having to talk, but you're getting to see the text. So you're getting the exposition in real time without having to hear it said.
Yeah.
I like that when that's done that way. Is this the part where Crispy starts reading because you said anime?
Not necessarily. Be honest, I kind of zoned out there for a minute.
To be clear, I love House of Cards and I love Frank's acting. He's an awful human being.
Like, yes, terrible.
But like,
Kevin Spacey.
We're gonna separate
the art from the artist in that sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But also, God,
allegedly,
fucking good.
Mm. Yeah, so good.
Hey man, good villains is good villains.
But he's also the hero. I mean, he's the protagonist while also being an awful human being.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could say it's an anti-hero.
He is the anti-hero you want. No.
He's not. No, I would not call him an anti-hero. I would just like, he is straight up a villain.
Yeah.
It's just the character is played so well that you kind of like, you kind of want him to get away with it.
I kind of wanted to watch him fail. To watch the House of Cards, the titular House of Cards collapse. I think that would have been fun.
Well, unfortunately, some things got in the way of that.
Yeah, which is beyond the scope of this podcast. There is another thing that I like, though, which is I do like reoccurring shots in movies and shows. When you have the same, like, openings, like, the same scene over and over again, and being able to reinforce something like that, For example, like a sunrise going over a place, like a building or whatever. And by doing that over and over again, you get the establishing shot. And also, you can like imply, like if it's a sunrise, oh man, things are getting better over at this company, this building.
True. That's something you don't necessarily notice is like weather playing into...
You guys are thinking way deeper on this stuff than I am. Like, that's just like, I see the sun coming up over a building. I'm thinking, oh, so this is establishing shot to tell us that it's morning.
Yeah.
That's all I get out of that.
Because I think a little bit more than a basic. Like, you gotta understand why these things matter. You gotta get the poetry part of things where you get the repeating.
Yeah.
Okay, George Lucas.
Yeah.
It's like song or poetry. It's like, you know, the one part rhymes with the next part.
He was not wrong. That's the problem. He's not wrong about that.
Yeah, he was just wrong about other stuff.
He needed more people to tell him no and to bring back the old people.
He needed a supervisor is what he needed.
Yeah. So, do we have any final thoughts before I call it then? Because it seems like we're getting tired.
Hamburger.
I love the Hamburglar. I think the Hamburglar should come back. Oh, wait, never mind. He is. Hamburglar has come back. He's in an anime now. I forgot.
What?
I do like when you have, speaking of Hamburglar, I like it when you have a character. You usually see this in cartoons, but you'll have the character that nobody can, that everybody can understand, even though they only say like one word over and over.
Can we just go back to the part where Hamburglar is in an anime? Because I'm still trying to process that.
You got isekai'd.
Oh my fucking god.
You just broke Crispy.
Got him.
I hate isekai.
This is McDonald's lore, I'll have you know, sir.
Is that the Wyndonald's thing that they started doing recently?
Yeah.
McDonald's. Okay.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It was not Hamburglar. It's Mayor McCheese.
That makes it so much better.
Such yeah.
a big difference, I know. what a good time. I don't want to download the app, but I do want to read the mangas that they're putting out. That McDonald's.
I will let you fall on that sword for us.
Yeah. You can dive on that grenade if you want to do that.
Yeah.
Personally, I will not.
I am good with that.
I'll give you my notes about the updated McDonald's lore.
You're going to put up like a vision board, just like all sorts of string connecting different points of the McDonald's cinematic universe.
Oh my God, a McDonald's cinematic universe? The McVerse?
He got Isaka. There are now two McDonald's universes, right?
Oh, it's the multiverse. It's the McMultiverse.
Yes, it's the McMultiverse.
I've just about fucking had it.
I think we should.
I was going to say, I could say something right now that would probably push Crisp over the edge, but I'm not going to do it. I have too much respect.
I swear to God. What I think it is.
No, not saying it. We've put that away.
Okay.
No.
So sorry,
I mentioned it.
This has been the Ox Unplugged. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Oh, dang, I binged it all. Yeah, back to space trucking. Hey, this is Big Leroy. Anybody catch that last episode of Auxiliary Unplugged? Man, them guys is a trip.